space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Take for granted the big part they play in our everyday lives. Their job is to transform the high voltage from electrical power lines to the lower voltage that's suitable for home use. Without them, raw electrical power would be virtually useless to the average person. Transformers are a critical part of modern life. But did you ever stop to wonder what's inside those canisters? To build a transformer, workers start by taking paper that's coated with epoxy glue and tape it to a wooden block. Next component, an eighth of an inch thick aluminum strip. It's a metal that can withstand the heat that a high voltage current produces. As the block is rotated, the paper and the aluminum strip are wrapped around it. an aluminum busbar, called the low voltage lead, sends low voltage current out from the transformer. Workers fold the lead and move the unit to another rotating block for more wrapping. The insulating paper has epoxy glue on both sides. This glue will later melt and bond several components in place. On the next block, a worker tapes on more epoxy paper along with epoxy-coated copper wire. He covers the paper. Then repeats the same process, forming a second layer of copper wire. He solders a high voltage lead wire to the copper wire, then rolls yet another layer of copper wire. Next, he welds on what's called the lead wire out, the wire that'll protrude from the transformer's cylinder, and attaches vinyl-coated wires that'll connect to different voltages out of the transformer. This completed unit is called the coil. Now, using electrical steel, workers build the transformer's other main component, called the core. The coil and core are tightly secured together with metal strapping, which will help to fix the assembly in the tank. Then it's into an oven, where they bake for 8 hours at 275 degrees. The heat improves insulation by removing any traces of humidity. It also melts the epoxy glue, fusing together the paper, the aluminum strip, and the copper wires. The assembly now goes into a steel tank. A rubber gasket is hammered around the perimeter and a grounding wire is bolted on. Then three thermoplastic bushings are inserted. Workers connect the low voltage lead to the thermoplastic bushings, then bolt the bushings to the tank. They adhere an oil filling guide to the side of the tank, then position an automated filling machine. A machine fills the tank with mineral oil, drawing a vacuum to make sure the oil disperses throughout the coil and core. The oil is used for its thermal and insulating properties. An internal fault detector will alert maintenance crews if there's a short circuit. A worker runs lead wire through the thermoplastic bushing and secures it in place. Next comes the high voltage connector. Finally, the tank cover is bolted shut. The transformation, so to speak, is finished. Before transformers go into service, they have to undergo some truly electrifying tests. This equipment simulates 145,000 volt lightning strike. Then it's into a water tank to test the transformer for leaks. If it passes muster, it's...
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Yeah, give me the number for 911, too. It's not rocket science. Yep, I got a lot to say today, but, hopefully I'll remember what all it was I had to say about the subject. You're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com and People for People Radio, TCT Radio, and all the other affiliated networks out there podcasting and rebroadcasting and such. So with that said, let's get into today's show. I posted a link on there about transformers, how it's made. I've actually posted this link prior because it's a really important thing. If you actually watch, I mean, the biggest mistake that the industry ever made was allowing me to see inside that transformer, to see what was actually going on in those big old cans that you see up there on the power pole, you know. And when you see what's actually going on inside there, it gives you a big understanding about how energy travels and how they're actually sending what would be basically worthless energy down the pipeline with the wires to your house. Because that without that transformer right there, you couldn't use that electricity. The voltage is too high, and it basically, it's at a too high of a frequency. It would set fire to your house the moment you tried to plug something in. You probably wouldn't fare too well. You'd look like one of them smoked hot dogs off of an open fire or something like that. It wouldn't be very good. Or, you know, like when Grandpa cooks the hot dogs on the grill and overcooks them, that's probably what you'd look like. It wouldn't be very nice. Anyway, nonetheless, it's not rocket science. And so, if you take a look at that video and watch real carefully what's going on in there, it'll give you a better understanding of how they're actually turning that energy back into usable energy. I also posted one on there just for informational purposes, how they're actually building these wind turbines down there. When big old giant windmills, there's a company out there that does them, and it's pretty interesting to watch because those two in combination with each other could do something pretty amazing. And see, you know, it's all about free energy here, but nonetheless, even if it ain't free energy, let's just get into why what efficiency could do for you is basically getting more use out of the energy that you do buy. Now, see, if you pay attention to nature, you know that high voltage is really powerful. I mean, high voltage does, it gets up to a certain temperature, high enough temperature that it can literally melt sand into glass. There's this thing called a fulgurite, which is basically lightning glass. You know, when the lightning bolt strikes the sand, and that basically superheats that sand and melts it into glass, and you get these really cool formations from the lightning strike as it works its way through the ground. So that's a lot of power. That's a massive amount of power. And actually, if you do happen to come across a fulgurite, you might want to hang on to it, because from what I understand, they're pretty valuable. If you can, the bigger the piece you can get up out of there, it's worth some money if you look into it. And anyway, it was actually a video one time, a long time ago, where a guy was putting lightning rods in the beach and catching lightning bolts, and he was making glass out of it, you know, to make dishes or drinking glasses and stuff, all kinds of sculptured art out of glass. Anyway, so if you understand how energy actually travels, and I've spent the last, oh man, this must be 20, 30 years just studying everything about energy, how it travels, you know, the do's and don'ts and all that kind of stuff. But once you understand that every bit of this energy, high voltage and whatever, it can actually be stored, now you understand why the capacitor is such a valuable thing. Go out and watch some of these videos about Tesla coils, and you see what they're doing. They'll have these capacitors, and when they charge these capacitors up, if you overcharge a capacitor, it will literally discharge itself. It'll shoot from whatever closest ground that it can and discharge that capacitor by itself. So they use a spark gap, and the reason why they do that is so that they can put a really powerful punch to those coils to make a real strong magnetic field. And then when that magnetic field collapses, by that time the capacitor's charged up again, and then it leaps across the gap again and repeats that cycle. And depending on what distance there is between the spark gap, how fast that frequency pulse can actually occur. And so also there's also there's AC capacitors and DC capacitors out there, polarized and non-polarized capacitors, but I'm not going to get into all that high-tech stuff on there. I just want to, you know, do the basics for the, for this particular show, because it's not rocket science. It's basically you're charging two plates up. A capacitor is two plates with a dielectric in the middle, like plastic, or the best one being glass or whatever. And, you know, to protect these from thermal breakdown, from any kind of heat generated from that voltage and whatever, if you're going to be using it at a high voltage deal, they put like mineral oil in there to disperse that that heat, to get that heat away from there. And if you actually watch this video about transformers, you'll note that that's exactly what they're doing inside there with their oil that they put inside there. Well, see, the biggest key to this transformer that needs to be paid attention to is the storage capability that those transformers have. Now, the very first part of the video, it shows this individual wrapping two layers of aluminum, and in between, sandwiched in between a layer of paper. Basically, the paper's got a resin in there so that when it gets to a certain temperature, it will kind of seal itself to each of the plates, forming a really strong bond in between there with no air pockets and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, the key to it is, number one, the amount of material used on the, each of the plates. They roll these around just like you're winding a coil of wire. And so basically that gives a massive surface area, both front and back of those plates, and even on the edges of those plates, for electrons to be stored. Positive on one side and negative on the other side. And so now basically you have a really powerful capacitor. Alright? And that's how you can take that high voltage, high frequency, and bring it back into a usable current again. Because, you know, the voltage, when the voltage goes up, the current goes down. And, but the, when you got a lot of current, it's hard to get that current to flow a long ways, because if you got that current flowing a long ways, it's meeting resistance, and so you'd go outside and you'd see your power lines would be probably on fire if they tried to put too much current through those wires, because they're not designed for that. And they would generate a lot of heat from the resistance of that energy trying to travel down that power line. So to get around this, they ramp the voltage up really high at a high frequency so that they can send it out farther in an AC wave. And even back in the old days when Edison was doing his DC, if you was living back in those days, and it wouldn't be nothing to see a power line on fire back then when DC current had lines going from one to the next, because the more current draw on those lines, the hotter those wires would get from the resistance, and it would cause it to catch itself on fire. That's one of the reasons why we ended up shifting over to AC current, because AC current was safer because of the way that it actually, you know, travels. It goes back and forth in waves, and so it don't have enough time to build up a lot of resistance that would cause it to get hot. Now, AC power lines can still get hot if you're drawing a heavy load off of them, but they're not going to get near as hot as a DC line if you're drawing the same load off of them. So there's a difference safety-wise why, you know, we're using AC current now. But nonetheless, even the current that we got coming down, or even the electricity that we use, our appliances are designed inefficiently. And so basically what ends up happening is we use a whole heck of a lot more power than necessary to do the same exact job that we're doing, you know, when you're running your radio or your clock radio. See, it don't take no 120 volts AC to run your clock radio. There's two separate clock radios out there. One of them actually uses a rectifier system where it uses 9 volts DC, and the other one actually uses 9 volts AC. So either way, you're only using 9 volts of either or. But instead, we got a transformer in between there that basically uses up more energy. And of course, with the energy, more energy used, the heat losses that will occur from like eddy currents in the cores, the transformer cores, will actually make it less efficient. So yeah, that's why you can go over there and you can put your hand on your clock radio and you'll feel that it's warm to the touch because all that wasted energy going down there. So what I'm proposing is that if people get together and they start figuring out more efficient ways in order to utilize this energy without having to generate all that waste heat, then the better efficiency, the cheaper your light bill is going to be. So even if you're still connected to the power grid, there's so many ways in which you can actually save money by re-engineering a few things in order to get that power. And as far as the actual hydroelectric dams or nuclear power plants or coal-fired power plants and the big machinery that they actually use out there, those coils do not care where that magnetic field comes from. And in order to get the 50 hertz that they use overseas or the 60 hertz that they use over here, it's just a matter of what frequency range you're actually pulsing that magnetic field. You allow that field to expand, you allow it to collapse, and back and forth. As many times as it cycles through that right there, that would be the frequency range at what these coils are actually being driven at. And so, with that understanding right there, that means that these transformers that you see out there on the pole, they could actually be used a little bit different than what they're normally used at. As far as how you're going to put that power in there, because the electron flows are going to react no matter how you put that power to that transformer. If you're cramming a lot of power down that transformer, you'll go outside and you'll hear that thing humming because it's got a really super strong magnetic field, which also means that its thermal temperature is actually going to get a lot hotter the harder you drive that thing. And so, if you want to make this thing not only last longer but become more efficient, then, it's just about how you're going to put that energy in there. And so, there's a guy out there named Gerard Moore, and he talks about transformers as well, and he talks about energy not being exactly what people think. That he basically says that electricity is radiation, and radiation, if you think about how this is the terminology in it, it's pretty much the same thing that I'm saying. Radiation and pulsing coils, the frequency. That right there. So anytime energy is radiating away like that magnetic field is radiating back and forth like that, then that's what he's talking about. I just got a comment in there. And so essentially, if we get to people understanding how energy actually travels, and really, really seriously want to, at the very least, become ridiculously energy efficient, then, once again, it's not rocket science. And I was asked a question in the chat room, does somebody want to call in? Yeah, just if you're not already in my contact list, just add me on Skype as... same username, add me as a contact, and then just call in. Okay, so basically, the reason why I wanted to put this video out there is because this particular video, and I've mentioned this before, it actually shows the secrets of this transformer. And there are ways. How you doing there, Justin?
Good, you suck.
Pretty good. Hold on a second. We are live, by the way. And so, was that you in the chat room asking about calling in?
Yeah, Jeff.
Okay. I just didn't recognize the name. Anyway, yeah, so basically these transformers could actually be used in a different way than what they're actually being used in, and make them a whole lot more efficient. For example, the capacitors in there. If I was going to design a transformer such as the way that they did it, I would build a system almost identical to what their system is. However, I would have a secondary system in there, which basically would have two capacitors in there. So you'd see more things sticking out of the side. And the reason for that is that second capacitor could be charged up, and through a vacuum spark gap, you could take the, when that capacitor got fully charged up and actually overcharged, it would discharge itself back down into the primary section of the transformer coil and give that thing a powerful punch. And this could actually be done with a ridiculously low amount of input voltage, because it's really super sampled by pulsing coils and DC power to actually ramp the voltage up, and that voltage is the pressure needed to actually charge the plates of this capacitor, positive on one side, negative on that side. And once it gets up to that point where that capacitor is completely full, the current actually stops flowing in there, everything is at rest. But then you try to stick more power in there, you will overcharge it, cause it to discharge itself, shooting across that spark gap, and then pulsing that primary coil again, which changes that magnetic flux again, and then when it collapses, the process would repeat itself. So you could get these transformers to pretty near really close to self-resonating if you done it properly. But either way, learning this technology of how they actually use these transformers out there in real life, you could make your own transformers at home. Now keep in mind, don't learn electrical safety by accident, because the more surface layers you got on that thing, the more powerful punch that thing's going to have to, is going to be capable of. And so you don't want to touch like an 800 microfarad capacitor. Will quite literally blow your thumb right off your hand. That's how much pressure is actually stored in that capacitor. They're really dangerous. If you're not careful with them, you can get hurt and even killed. And so with that said, electrical safety is going to be a key to that whole deal. But nonetheless, taking every bit of what we've been talking about here on the Mad Science Show, understanding how energy travels, and it doesn't matter at what frequency range that we're talking about, unless you want to talk about, get into dangers of high frequencies, like difference between a 60 hertz magnetic field and up into megahertz or higher magnetic field. So now you're talking the difference between microwave and just normal magnetic wave, that kind of thing. It's the speed at which and the length of that wave that makes a difference. See, like in a microwave, it's a really super short, super fast wave. And so that super short, fast wave interacts with the water molecule, which is a dipole molecule, has a positive and a negative, and rocks that thing, water molecules, back and forth so fast that it produces friction, which in turn produces heat and cooks your food. And so that's the difference. That's why you want to be practicing safety when you're talking about high frequencies. But you don't even have to get to a ridiculously high frequency in order to get the maximum amount of power. Because if you take at a really low speed, and if you've seen that last video that I did called Rotary Switch 2, the slower that was going, the more powerful that back EMF punch was off of those coils. And that's what you need. You need that power. You need to be able to allow that energy to flow freely. You charge up the field, which is basically you're pressurizing a balloon, and then you release that pressure and you grab all that power on the way out, instead of you actually grabbing it on the way to the coil, using the energy on the way to the coil, and using the energy as the coil fields are collapsing on the backflow, you can store that power and boost those coils up yet even further. So we have the capability to quite literally build the perfect transformers that would get maximum efficiency as possible. And when you want to get into the free energy realm, that's just a matter of tapping into what nature's already provided. You can store static electricity, quite literally catch lightning and store the power of that. You got to understand how powerful lightning is. And you got to have a container that can withstand that much power. Remember, I said here when we started the show that fulgurites are called they're called lightning glass, but they're made by a lightning bolt hitting sand, and that temperature at which that sand melts is a really high temperature. And so, you know, if it's got enough power in a lightning bolt to quite literally melt sand into glass, you got to have a really good storage system to be able to, move some of that energy into, storage. Well, there are all kinds of methods to where you could equally distribute out this power to allow that energy to flow across like a plane instead of just, shooting it down into one container. You can actually spread it out to multiple containers. So we could build power plants, power storage plants, all over the place and deliberately capture lightning to spread it out equally, and the moment all these capacitors were charged up, they would discharge across and then pulse coils that in turn would start bringing it back down to energy that we're accustomed to using. So it's not rocket science. You take this idea that's coming from these transformers and you watch how they're building these things. And take note at the thickness of the wire. See, these wires have to be really thick in order to allow a lot of current to flow. That tells you that there's a lot of power potential going on there when you got a thick wire like that. Because when you want to build a secondary that has, you want to step voltage up, your secondary is going to have thinner wire and a whole lot more turns to allow for a strong magnetic field and a pressurization of that current that you're putting to it to be able to ramp that voltage back up again. So we know how to quite literally manipulate whether we want current or whether we want voltage or whether we want both. So we could actually build a side-by-side system that one coil is actually allowing a lot of current flow, and the other one is actually riding a wave right on top of it produce a really super high voltage wave. And so we're not only getting frequency, but we're getting current at the same exact time. Now, the standard system that we're involved in right now, I'm positive they know all this kind of stuff, but, they never have taken it to the extreme level to actually give you a potential of being able to use energy that you're paying for in such an incredibly efficient manner, such as by riding that extra wave on top of there. You know, I can send the current one direction where I want it. I can send the high voltage off into like a noble gas and produce plasma, and instead of having to use a lot of current to produce my heat for my hot water or warming the air around my house or whatever, I can energize a noble gas into the pure state of matter and have a plasma system going on right there, and that plasma would transfer that heat energy into whatever medium that I needed it transferred into. And so everything that we need is right there. And the whole key to getting this to be able to happen is for people to start trying this stuff. They're just ideas until, they actually be put into, action. The solutions that we're offering here, on Shaziz Radio, we show all kinds of different things on how things work, where you could go with this idea, and if you grab this idea up and run with it, There's no limit to where you can go. So, Justin, you got any thoughts on what I've been saying here? You still there, brother?
Well, depends on what, I don't know.
Yeah, I got you.
As far as, like you said, the transformer, it's just a variable, and even the refrigerator unit itself is a variable, right? So the Pagpole transformer is a variable too, but they're all on the same variable, right? Like you're saying, everything is built inefficiently, right? Because everything's been back engineered to be obsolescent. Disposal.
Yep.
So it is all built inefficiently, but we gotta remember that the way that they built the original Pagpole transformer and this and that, it's all on that same loop system. Whereas if you take, you know, a neon sign transformer and you put a coil from one side to the other side of it, and it's now an induction stove, right? Because it's high frequency, it'll react to the steel pan or the iron pan, whatever you use, right? It induces the pan. So you're using, you know, 18,000 kilovolts at 0.60 milliamps.
Yeah, well, that's
and you're cooking your eggs within seconds. You know what I mean, or your steak, right?
Yeah,
that's variable. Our stove is the variable. We can change our stove, and then you know it's still running on the AC system, right? The neon sign transformer, or the MOT, is still running on the AC system, but it's costing less. We've made it more efficient just by doing.
Yeah, I posted some Wikipedia links in there for whatever you guys think about Wikipedia. Nonetheless, you know, they're kind of biased over there, but every once in a while you can find a fairly decent article. So this one actually says at the top that they something about, you know, verifying links or something like that. Nonetheless, even if you come anywhere close to trying to explain to people how energy actually travels or even mention free energy, Wikipedia is a hardcore hater of that. They don't like free energy and over unity. They're basically got their nose in the system, and that's the way they are. And they're really biased. But
even the community of YouTubers that are, you know, they're biased too, because, you know, look at Jared. You know, he's sitting there cussing and swearing on his YouTube videos and calling people.
That's
profound words. And he, like you said, his terminology, he's saying radio. Well, radio is an acoustic wave. It's the same thing as an electrical wave sent through a wire. They're both rarefaction and compression rates, right?
My only complaint with Gerard is all the cursing and the way that he tries to get his message across, but he is a brilliant man, and he understands a lot about energy, and the way that he's showed a few things on the capacitors, but I can kind of understand his frustration, because this is something, like I said, it's not rocket science. It's really simple when you get down to understanding how this energy is actually traveling, and you can do a lot more with it. And so, if you guys and gals out there go out and listen to Gerard Moore, and, you know, you got to be aware that he's, boy, he cusses like worse than a sailor. I don't know. But either way, if you can actually get into one of his videos where he's explaining how energy is radiation as opposed to, like, the electron theory, how he believes that energy is actually traveling, it makes a lot of sense. You know what I'm saying, Justin?
The word radiation or radio frequency is exactly what I said. It's comprised of an oscillation, right, of the atmosphere, or right, and an electrical wire has a density level, and therefore it has its own atmosphere. If you were to look at it, it would be like a balloon filled up. Now that is pushing pressure on what we call a gaseous state, our atmosphere that we breathe in. So they work in tangent together.
Yeah,
it's like you'll see, if you go up on a mountain, you'll see a difference in your usage, in your battery. You also see it, if you go up high enough, you'll be able to feel a separation, what we call a static charge.
Yeah, there is some definite effects to the environment, that's for sure. In the TCT chat room, May said in their interest in video on pole transformers, one in front of neighbor's house, also wondered what vortex electronics waves are coming in and off that ugly thing. Had no idea about its innards. Gee whiz. Well, now you know what they look like inside. And actually, folks, as far as those things being ugly and unsightly, you don't even have to put them up there on a pole to use them, you know, use that technology. I mean, as far as the way that they're basically transmitting all this energy, where they got all these power lines strung across over there, you know, that's only because they got to charge you for it. You know, I guess send the power down there. However, if you get off the grid and you have your own custom systems, because now you understand how that transformer works and you understand how energy travels, you build your own home power station and let nature put the power to the transformer. You'd be surprised at what you could do with a 40 watt solar panel and a transformer, as opposed to, you know, having to pay the man for electricity. Because once again, those magnetic fields, or those coils, they don't care where that magnetic field comes from. If you're pulsing batteries and you're doing it properly, you can actually catch some of the flyback to put right back into the battery. And so while the sun's out, it's pulsing these back and forth and producing the energy you need to run it. And the capacitor portion of it, which I also posted a link in the video or in the chat room over there, superchat.html. And TCT and Awake Radio and such. And I'm not over there at People for People Radio, but if you want to go over there and visit with them, check out the Super Chat. Right underneath there is a People for People Radio link to their site. You can jump over there on that and say hi to those nice folks. But anyway, the capacitor, I posted a link to another Wikipedia article that gives you some sort of understanding of capacitors and different size capacitors, and it'll even show you, like on a schematic, what types of capacitors. One's a polarized and non-polarized, and there's an AC capacitor and a DC capacitor, all of which have different uses. But nonetheless, they're all, if you understand how to use them and how they actually function, they're storage devices. It's as simple as that.
When people talk about defying or getting away from quote-unquote Lenz's law, capacitors are not an ohmic device, whereas a coil is.
Well, and that's why that rotary switch is really important, because when you take a battery and you hook each lead of a coil to that battery, all the electrons flow up into that coil, and they basically pressurize that coil, producing an electromagnet. And the field becomes stationary at that point. Once it reaches its maximum amount of power that you're inputting, that's how big that field will be. And so the Lenz effect occurs at that moment when this field over here is actually pushing back against the power input on the other side, and that is the way that the Lenz effect your electrical generators, because it produces that back pressure that now is acting like a brake on the armature. And so once you understand that and you want to get around, instead of invoking Lenz effect, you put the power to the coil and then you separate the two. Instantaneously, that magnetic field will collapse, and that back pressure of power will produce an arc across. And so that's why you can see, if you take that coil and you tap it on and off of the deal, you'll see this arc jumping from the battery to the deal. It's going to take the shortest path to ground. And so you not only use the power on the way out, but you can use the power on the way back. So on the way out, you may have a DC wave going on the way out, where that energy is traveling directly, and then on the way back, depending on how rapidly this is pulsing, will give you whatever frequency of AC wave on the way back. And the AC wave can be basically turned back into a DC wave, which you can send some of that power over to another battery. That's how a doggone battery charger works. But nonetheless, just understanding those basic concepts will give you the understanding on how you can actually utilize this energy to its maximum efficiency. So, I don't need a lot of power to produce a strong magnetic field that can give me a really bad electrical shock on the flyback on it. You can test what I'm saying by taking a 9-volt battery and a coil, and if you got your thumb on, let's say on the negative, and you got your wire on your other thumb, and you sit there and tap that, when you push down on it, you're not going to feel it because it's just a DC current going one way. But once that pressure is on there, when you release that, if your thumb is still touching that wire, still on the opposite side, you can feel that power as it's released rapidly, and it'll shock the crud out of you. So once you got that figured out, now you know how to catch that power on the way back. And you can guide it in whichever direction you want. And if you want the AC wave that is required to run the appliances that we got, then you know how to do that as well. And like I said, just like where they're using Tesla coils, how they pulse the primaries using a high voltage power source that is going into a capacitor. When the capacitor becomes overpressurized, discharges across the spark gap, producing a strong magnetic pulse in the primary, which that wave then in turn goes up and affects the secondary. And at the frequency range of what they're doing, it's at the speed of what they're doing this, will determine how much power is actually going up that secondary. And finally, all that energy, all those electrons basically storing on what they call the top load of the Tesla coil, and all that energy is up there storing, actually using that top load and the atmosphere around it as a huge capacitor. And so when this all pressurizes so far and there's no more room for any more power to be stored on that top load, it's going to seek the shortest path to ground, because you got too much power on one side of this capacitor, and it's going to do just like what a small capacitor would do. When you overcharge it, it's going to discharge itself to the shortest path to the nearest ground, so that everything balances it back out. And that's where you get those really cool lightning bolts off the top of it. Did I explain that pretty well there, Justin?
I get a lot of it, but I get lost because you're trying to cram so much in there.
Yeah, I guess sometimes I can be overwhelmed. I put that information out there so rapidly, but in my mind, it's so ridiculously simple. I mean, to understand it mechanically, that's how I look at everything, is mechanically, how the gears in the clock are turning. This gear turns this way, which causes that gear to turn that way, which causes the next gear in line to turn the opposite direction, and so on. And depending on the size of the gear will determine how fast the next one in line's moving or how slow the next one's moving. The same thing can be applied with plumbing and electricity, just by understanding how this energy is actually traveling. Folks, we're not doing anything amazing. All we're doing is what nature already provided, but we're doing it in such an incredibly inefficient manner that, you know, we pay high electric bills. And they don't get any cheaper because, according to the way that industry works, it's supply and demand. If more people are using electricity and they say that they're using more coal or more of whatever fuel that they use to actually run their generator, then they want to pass that on to the consumer. Now, with an electrical power plant such as a nuclear power plant, they ain't got no doggone excuse why to keep paying, charging you electric bill, because basically what they got going on is the equivalent of free energy. Once they bought that doggone fuel, then that fuel's going to last for a long time. And so if you're on a power plant that is actually running nuclear fuel, then you should be paying a less electric bill. And if you're on a power plant that's running wind power, then you should be paying less. If you're on a power plant that's using hydroelectrics, then you should be paying less. If you're on a power plant that's using thermoelectrics, you should be paying less. It's the coal-fired power plants that maybe you could pay just a hair bit more. Huh?
Who are we paying when every country in the world is in debt?
Well, I don't want to get into the semantics of who's getting the money and who ain't getting the money, but the folks out here that are actually burdened with the doggone actual light bill themselves, you know, could you imagine if you could cut your electrical bill in half? There's half more money that you got to spend on other more important things that you could do. And if you could cut that electric bill completely to zero, then you'd have yet even more money. And, you know, regardless of what you feel about money or the monetary system, forget all that. Think about this. The quality of life that people could enjoy if this energy and these ideas and technologies were shared directly across the board. You see, the power company, they send out these doggone deals, and I actually asked the dang power company, power man, I said, why is it I keep getting this deal in the mail that says that I'm using 70% more energy than my neighbors? And the first words out of his mouth was, it's propaganda. So I wasn't really using more energy than my neighbors. They just wanted me to think I was using more energy than my neighbors so that I could get into that whole, reduce your carbon footprint propaganda scandal. You know what I'm saying?
Like, the world, I know what you're saying. Like, we got LEDs, light bulbs that we can buy and put in our ceilings, right?
Yeah.
We're basically converting all of the shelves to LEDs. You won't be able to buy an incandescent anymore.
Yeah, it seems like LEDs have advantages, though.
The world is always on a path to moving forward, but it's very slow because we have created these regulations and laws and legislations and mandates and bills and acts and codes and conducts, all of these things, right? And we placed them there hindering our progression.
Yep.
Right? We could progress at a higher acceleration as a species, but like I just facilitated there, all of those things for terminology that we've hindered ourselves.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say, is that people got to stop relying on the system to do anything like what you're talking about, because we got access to all this information right now. Any group of people from any part of the country or world, whatever, taking these ideas, getting together, networking, and building a research facility, you could literally build the things and share that information open source with their community, and everyone out there would benefit, and there wouldn't be nothing that the system could do to stop that kind of grassroots movement. You know, when you talk about the LED systems earlier, all right,
yeah.
It doesn't matter whether you use LEDs or whether you use the tungsten element, because LEDs only require an electron flow to interact with the materials inside the LED and release photons of light, which produces visible light that you can use these for, which makes them incredibly efficient because you don't have to have a lot of current to actually run these things. However, you don't actually have to have a lot of current to run a tungsten light bulb either. If you take that tungsten and you measure the resonant frequency of that tungsten element, you can quite literally send a radio frequency through that same exact bulb, no current, because how tungsten and nichrome actually function is it resists current flow. However, both of them can be vibrated to such a rapid rate that they will in turn produce friction, which in turn produces heat, which in turn produces the light. So at a very low input, you can get a tungsten element to light up by producing the right frequency to basically resonate that, just like the tuning forks that we were talking about. You know, you match that tuning fork and you've got an identical tuning fork. You bang one on the table and you put it near the other one, and it will vibrate. This is the exact same concept.
Yeah, it's the harmonic coupling. And I gave you a picture there in your inbox. You see that?
Yeah, let me take a look. But do not circulate. Is that what it says?
No, that's my picture. I sent you a thing.
Hold on, let me scroll down. Maybe
all right, Bob.
Well, I'm down there. I don't see it. All I see is a super chat link.
So right below that.
Hold on, I'm trying.
I'm 56.
I think I clicked on something. Hopefully it'll show up.
Yeah, send it again. just like it's exactly what you're talking about.
Well, explain it to me, because it's taking its time to load.
What it is it's three pictures. Three pictures. One's a tuning fork, one's a Tesla coil, and one's an obelisk.
Yeah.
I gave all the map for the obelisk and how it works as a resonant stone that we utilize today. So we use what we call radio transmitters and satellites, digital beams and et cetera like that. But what they are is they're all oscillators, and they knock on every single mobile phone, TV, computer, console, satellite, right? And all they are is, in your phone, all it is is a tuning fork. Or it's a crystal. Which is an obelisk. So, if that's the case, the receiver is an obelisk, the transmitter as well could be an obelisk. Right? So, linking all of these identities together in our, various sciences, how all these oscillators work.
Yeah.
So, like, it's hard to, like, explain what I gave you to,
Well, they're all doing the same thing. See, a tuning fork is more of a mechanical way of doing the same thing that we're actually doing with a Tesla coil, and the obelisk could actually be like an antenna receiver or a transmitter.
Any sound that vibrates, that propagates, is a mechanical form.
And you know that a lot of these deals like they got are made out of granite, and granite has a piezoelectric quality to it as well.
Right, yes.
So that means you can resonate it.
For example, if you took a tuning fork, right, and you were to make it out of granite, you would do your width of the prong, and then the length of the prong, and you would multiply that times the frequency, and then divide it, I can explain the math formula, but, and then you would take granite. Now, you would measure how you would do that is you measure the sound, the speed of sound in granite, which is measured, you can measure in different units and stuff, but in an English system, it would be measured at 5,950. Meters per second.
Well, there's all the mathematics and everything that the standard system tries to explain it with, it's pretty complicated to the average Joe. I understand exactly what you're saying. The frequency that everybody talks about, and the way the electromagnetic fields work, and the difference that all these different spectrums can do all kinds of amazing things. If you actually get into frequency ranges, you'd be surprised at what happens whenever you start going tuning and transmitting and stuff like that. There's a reason why the FCC does what they do, because back in the old days, yes. The whole concept of citizens band radio there were certain things that if you had certain types of equipment, you could literally bleed right over the top of everybody else and interrupt their transmission. But, you know, that was the difference in the power there. You know, the higher frequencies are obviously going to win out there. But when people understood how that actually functioned, and after a while they decided to go to higher frequencies, such as, you know, an FM spectrum, they were able to get a lot more individual channels, but a lot clearer quality of a signal on the other side. You understand my point there?
Yeah, I acknowledge that, yes.
Yeah, so basically, we've been doing amazing things with energy for a long time, but when it all boils down to it, it's all the same energy. You know, according to the so-called laws of physics, energy can neither be created nor destroyed. So where does it go? I mean, it's either at rest or it's in motion, one of the two. It's still there.
It's what we perceive of it, right? Like, imagine if you were able to have, you know, a visual of what a parrot sees, right? Like, we only see this many colors, this wide of a range on that spectrum.
Yeah.
A bird has a wider range, right? Now imagine if you had a wider range and you were also just able to see, like, a snake down into the infrared. And then if you could top it off, giving yourself the availability to hear within to the ultrasonic range, then what you can manifest and create with the availability of those would be greater than what we have now.
Well, yeah, but here's another deal. NASA supposedly has equipment that can quite literally see electromagnetic spectrums. They can actually see electromagnetic waves. All right, and there's actual paper out there that you can put over a permanent magnet or even a transformer, and you can see the magnetic flux lines, which is perfect, because if you can see that magnetic field, you can study it, you know? And as far as a transformer, if you're pushing a lot of power to that transformer, and then you can actually see that magnetic spectrum that's going on, and you got this wave that is extending out past that transformer, then you're putting too much power to it. Because
called a ferro cell. What you're talking about is called a ferro cell. It's got 36 red, greens, blues, and white LEDs.
Yeah?
Yeah, so there was a guy on YouTube, I can't remember his name, but yeah, he made this cell and it shows the magnetic fields.
Yeah, well, I'll see.
And it shows the geometry.
The whole thing what I'm trying to say, though, you know, if you got that kind of equipment, all you got to do is sit there and study what's going on, and you can actually tune those transformers back to where they are super efficient. Just by, you know, when you're observing that magnetic flux as it's expanding and collapsing on that transformer, and you got like let's say a potentiometer or a variac, and you can sit there and turn that power down until the magnetic flux just goes right up to the edge of the core and stops, and then when it collapses, because all you need is that interaction between the core and the coil in order to get that current flow that you're wanting. It's as simple as that, man. And once you get down to that perfect number, you write that number down and tell everybody else this is the number to run these at this perfect frequency, which means a couple things. One of which is that the eddy currents that would have been created from overpressurizing this transformer are no longer, because now you're only putting the amount of power in necessary to get the same reaction that you want, instead of the eddy currents generating extra heat, which eventually causes the transformer to continuously build up heat and then turn around and destroy the windings, the insulation on the windings of the wire itself. You get a transformer that you can run at the perfect frequency without ever getting it hot enough for the insulation on the copper wire to reach its thermal breakdown, which means that that transformer will last indefinitely. It won't fail. The only thing that could possibly make it, it would be years of, corrosion or something like that. Other than that, it's not going to fail due to temperature difference. And if you keep that thing in an environment, let's say away from, ways for it to be able to oxidize, like if you had this transformer inside a vacuum, and you was running this transformer inside a vacuum doing the same exact job, now you don't have the atmosphere around it that is actually causing the materials to oxidize and wear out. And if you're blocking out any kind of ultraviolet, then you don't have to worry about the actual insulation finally deteriorating. So, nature will take back what you don't use. But there are ways to preserve things against, to slow down the effects of nature on, deterioration. You see what I'm saying? It's one of the reasons why we could find things, like deep down in ice or deep down in the dirt that seem to be still in good condition after all these years, because they're not oxidized. They don't have access to the oxygen that will allow, nature to deteriorate it. Does that make sense to you? Did I lose you?
If you don't want your transformer deteriorate, just stick it in some mineral oil.
Well, there you go. That's a simple solution. Just to insulate it away from, the potential of being oxidized, and the copper won't turn green, and the metals won't rust and stuff like that, and it'll last forever. And so, running at the right frequency, building your own personal transformers that you can store that energy and reuse that energy as it's coming in and out, then you could turn around and basically make your own power plant at home that would last your entire lifetime and probably on into your grandchildren's and their grandchildren's lifetime without any kind of mechanical failure or anything like that, any kind of thermal breakdowns.
Like, it's not a hard thing to get off the grid. Throw up a little wind generator and some solar panels and you're good. Really, if you go around right now and you measure your amperage, how many amps are you using? Maybe 20, 30 amps? And if you're out in the garage and you're using the air compressor and the welder, you're maybe using another 30 amps. So the maximum you need is 60 amps.
Yeah.
So, like 100 amp service is not a hard system to create.
Well, what I'm trying to say here is that this basically points out the doggone hypocrisy of everything that you're told out there as far as, why we have these energy problems or carbon footprints and all that kind of stuff. Folks, these folks out there are living in a fairy tale. And even those people out there who are like, oh, save the planet, they're living in a fairy tale as well. They're buying all the hype because nature is more powerful than we will ever be. Nature will be here long after us, and no matter how much of a mess we make, nature will get rid of us and keep nature and repair everything. So, if we're working in perfect harmony with nature, nature's happy, we're happy, and we got all our needs met. It's that doggone simple. But to give somebody else the power over you as a person or your family by keeping you in bondage of having to pay the power company, when we say getting off the grid, that means you're getting away from the man. You're not paying the man anymore. It's not impossible to do this.
What about the land tax?
Well, that's for somebody else to try to figure out. I'm showing everybody how to solve the energy problem, and we need somebody else show people.
Yeah, but there literally is tens of thousands of people that have already installed and are off the grid.
Sure.
This land tax problem.
Sure. But look.
Tens of thousands of people have gone on YouTube and showed their system, how they live off the grid, how they live off the solar and the wind, maybe even a diesel engine with buying some gas, which is literally a quarter of the price of hydro.
Right?
So there's people that have done all of this.
That's right.
What a
but it's
contact.
Simple.
What about paying for the land that is really everybody?
Look.
This Mother Earth, right? Our mother. Then why are we paying to somebody to live on our mother?
That's a societal issue, and that's what I'm trying to point out, the hypocrisy of it. I don't call this mad science for nothing.
But that creates...
Look,
that
I understand what you're saying.
Man,
listen.
Right, but that's the whole point. It allows for the whole manifestation of all of the other things that control everything. If you didn't have to pay for a land tax, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get that. But see, look, I can only fight one battle at a time. I can't fight the whole land tax battle while I fight the whole energy crisis.
What I'm saying, is that you're not fighting a battle. Because there's tens of thousands of people that have already done what you're putting out there.
It doesn't matter. I'm still fighting a battle.
I've done it on a church size scale.
Sure you have.
Sure
you have, and I'm not even discounting that. What I'm saying is my battle isn't over until the world changes, period. I'm going to have mad science until the world changes, and so that means that I'll probably have mad science till the day I die, and everything will possibly be just exactly the way it is now. Nonetheless, until the average Joe out there finally realizes that the only way to get your power is to take your power. That's it. The knowledge is already there. The work has already been done. The researchers, the proof of concept's already been proven. I've been saying this ever since day one. The exact same thing that you're sitting there explaining. I said this since day one. The proof of concept is there. The solutions are there. The technology is available. The materials, everything. Everything that you need to become energy independent from, the local power company and the government is right there in front of you. Now, it's up to everybody else out there who wants to enjoy said freedom is to exercise said freedom by getting the knowledge and getting together in groups, building networks, and start utilizing this. Because, until enough people do this, then the system is still in control. It's plain and simple. And so, I understand. I'm sitting here talking about things that people done before. Every one of these doggone inventions that I keep pointing out was things that people had done before. So I'm trying to show people, here is the way that you can go and you can get this power, or you can get this particular resource, and here's how you can share it with those people who are less fortunate that aren't able to get all these things. We could build power stations right now on every single property that would work so perfect in harmony with nature. No pollution, ridiculousness, safety, top priority, and everybody would still be able to enjoy exactly what they're enjoying right now as far as how we could reach over and turn the light switch on and have heat and all this kind of stuff and move humanity into the newest age, such as what we could potentially become. You free the mind up, and the mind ain't all slave, your body ain't all enslaved by having to go out and earn thousands of dollars per year just to pay for lights that you want to use and the air conditioning and the heating. You free that mind up and you put that mind to work out there. And now, instead of using your body to work, you're actually using your mind to help improve on other things out there, such as figuring out why it is that we keep paying the doggone man taxes on property that we already own. So, if we're all in it as a family and we all own it in together, then there shouldn't be, any taxes on anything. I agree with that. But my job is to wake the world up to showing them potential.
I'm not paying taxes on anything. We do need a monetary system per se. No land tax on your house. Your property is your property. You know, people get to keep their places. You know, you can have communities that say, okay, this person's not upkeeping their house, their lawn's 5 feet tall, everything's overburdened, the garbage, there's rats. You know, you come together as a community, you say, hey, you gotta clean this up, or you're gonna have to move out of our community. You know what I mean?
Well, but in a perfect world.
We're not in a perfect world, so we still have to have some of these things. Like, a tax is needed to, we need to pay for roads, we need to pay for doctors, because, you know, we have to give, you know, a stimulation to people that want to do things too, right? Because people like nice, like golf clubs and Ferraris and boats and stuff like that, and if everybody's just sitting around living off the grid, maintaining their gardens, we're not going to really achieve anything in a, you know.
Well, I get what you're saying, Justin, but listen, at a higher state of being, enlightenment or whatever, there could be a potential future for humanity to not want for all these different things. And if they did want one, you know, a community gets together and makes it happen. But the whole concept of us forever having to be burdened by the need to get out there and slave away just to find shiny things that we could all create for one another. You know, so far down into the future, if mankind doesn't destroy themselves, we might very well find ourselves in a perfect kind of utopia where, you know, instead of people being greedy and killing each other over resources and money, they learn how to be super efficient. Now, I'm asking for the impossible dream. I understand that. But nonetheless, if you're going to talk about potential of what we could do as opposed to what we are doing or what we have done, I have no limitations. We're only limited by our own flaws. And as long as we allow those flaws to be number one in our lives, then we're going to continuously have these discussions about what could be better and what couldn't be better, so on down the line. But as far as how far the human mind could actually go, however you figure our mind got here, the creator of our mind, the creator of our spirit and our creativity in general, there is no limitations. If you can dream it, you can make it so, is what I believe. And so I honestly believe that if we could ever get the right mindset into all the people of the world, that there's no limitations to how far we could advance technology-wise and society-wise and all that. We could get to a point where you didn't even need money. You didn't have to have no chip to track you. You didn't have to have no ID or nothing like that. You just, as a person, go over and I could use some of this. I have some of this. You know, we could trade, you know, our works with each other. You know, like a barter type system, whatever. You know, if I need some service or whatever, and you can provide that, and I can offer you something else in return, and we share, you know, all our knowledge with one another. Could you imagine where society could actually go, how far we could accomplish things? That's what
isn't
I'm
that what
about.
We've started? Isn't that what YouTube is?
Well, it's getting there.
You know, if I make, you know, if I have a YouTube right channel and I make, you know, $1 million off of it. Isn't that the community that's giving me that? But it was taxed on that. YouTube takes their 40% cut, and then the government takes their 45% of two. So I'm only left with $400,000, $300,000 out of $1 million.
You know, the system is not the epitome of perfection, that's for sure. But you know, in all fairness, if the system was perfect, then YouTube would be fair, the government would be fair, everybody would get what they needed, and, you know, like in the system right now, we still need money, we still need a constitution, we still need that piece of paper to say that, you know, we have certain rights, because if the government gets out of control, we gotta fix it, because we don't live in a perfect world. A perfect world, we wouldn't need no weapons, you know? Outside of defending ourselves against the occasional lunatic or something like that, you know, a little self-defense, we might do that. But nonetheless, you know, because of the nature of man, and the nature of history and all the things that we've ever seen, we aren't seeing these, holy grail of free energy devices actually being shared with the world. We see little bits of possibilities, like Gerard is talking about how he used, that 2,500 watt generator, pushed it through a 50 kV transformer. What in the heck just happened there? I think my doggone computer keeled over.
No, you're still talking.
Alright, well, I can't figure out why my screen just died on me. You still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Anyway, he took a 25 kV transformer, was able to get, extra work out of the doggone thing by pushing that power into a 50 kV transformer and then down into a 25 kV transformer, and got more work out of the doggone thing than it should have been capable of. So, anyway,
yeah, well, they do have a rating for their transformer, right? They design these things, but they don't run them at full potential. That's why everything on electricity has plus and minus value.
Yeah.
Just because somebody runs a transformer at 120 volts at 2 amps, right, doesn't mean that it can't run at something different.
Well,
there's no reason it can't run at 140 volts at 2.5 amps, right, 3 amps. Because the end result is what we measure. The electrical company measures in amps.
Yeah.
But even yourself, you talk, well, I don't care about the amps, and I don't care about the volts. I'm looking for the effects, the causes and the effects, the displays that take place before your eyes.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Well.
So, yeah, like work done can be achieved in many ways, like. We talk about Tesla coils and stuff like that. Well, if you take, a hairpin circuit, right, and you got 32 gauge wire, you can light up a 1,000 watt light bulb with that and then touch the wire, and yet, normally, if you did that on 240, you would be dead. Not to mention, you have to run a much bigger wire.
Yeah, but
the oscillation, how many oscillations per second will achieve the same thing?
Yeah, but the whole thing is, it's like we got more energy than we could ever use in a trillion lifetimes. And so the whole debate over, energy crisis or resources and all that kind of stuff is the biggest lie to keep everybody entangled in the doggone system that we're finding ourselves at the displeasure of being stuck in. And so, what I'm trying to show people right here is everything, all the research, combined research that I've done through all this time, my study of how energy actually travels, how to get it to do what you want it to do, as opposed to what the system wants you doing with it, and as far as all these regulations and legislations that hinder people from actually getting off the power grid, it's a dirty shame, because it basically shows the hypocrisy of the system that tells you on one hand you got to reduce your carbon footprint, but on the other hand, if you do so, it's going to cost you extra money because we need you to pay taxes so we can build bridges and all this kind of stuff. When in reality, there never was an energy crisis. There never was no climate change due to man-made emissions. It was all a scam in order to put money into the corrupt pockets of all the different people out there, including the mainstream science community. So, the ridiculousness that's going on is beyond ludicrous.
Yeah, you have the rights to your modern technology and sciences that are going on.
Yeah.
Turn on your black box and flip through the channels. There's your modern science. There's your participation,
well,
right? Because if you read in the charters of human rights and stuff beyond the Constitution, right? I don't know if it's in the American Constitution or if it's in one of the charters, but it says that humanity has the right to their to their local science programs and stuff to participate in these. So how come you aren't participating in, you know, what everybody says is NASA?
That's a pretty well loaded and ridiculous question, because for one thing, you and I personally have disputes over terminology, because I'm trying to simplify, and you put it in a high-tech terminology, which we're both right in what we're actually saying, but we're butting heads because of the terminology. So if I go to NASA, NASA's not going to want to hire me, because I'm going to be outside the box so far, which I'm sure somewhere in NASA, there's a guy just like me down in some hidden room down there building all kinds of crazy stuff that's actually working, and they're making money hand over fist off this guy, but they're not telling anybody about this guy, because if a guy like me gets out there and tells all the secrets, well, then they lose the whole purpose of their funding. You see what I mean? That's why, you know, I go talk to any engineer from, whether it be any kind of electrical engineer or any internal combustion engineer or any like that, any mechanics. I talk to them and I tell them things like, you can run a car on pure distilled water with absolutely no electrolyte, and they just, their head spins, their eyes go back in their socket, and I lose their doggone attention. And when in reality, if they understood the physics of how water actually functions under different circumstances, then they would understand exactly what I'm saying. We've been doing it. We do it with nuclear power plants. We've been doing it with steam. We've been doing it with coal-fired power plants. It's funny that we take and we boil water into steam, and then we can actually push turbines to run big old electrical generators to produce electricity, and that shows that steam, water, can be turned into a workable force such as pressure. And also, when a nuclear power plant finally fails, every single time a nuclear power plant has an explosion, the very, 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 very first thing is what? They call it, what do they call it, Justin?
I have no idea.
A hydrogen explosion. Because at anywhere from 650 to 1250 PSI, when that water is superheated into steam, it's in a gaseous state. And so all you need from that point on is some sort of pressure and ignition to cause that thing to basically, when the like, just like compression ignition in a diesel engine, when...
Yeah, there was a guy down the States that made three hydroxide cylinders, and you just used a little thermal plug to heat them up. He did it up with the Corvette.
Yeah. So all you're having to do is basically, see, gas or water, a liquid can't be compressed, and that's why we have hydraulics. However, that same liquid at the right temperature will be in a gaseous state, which now can be compressed, and that compression will separate the hydrogen and oxygen, and the process of separating hydrogen and oxygen releases an electrical charge, which now is your ignition point, and now you have a hydrogen explosion. Well, actually, implosion if you want to be technical, and explosion because of the oxygen as well. That's what happens. And with that knowledge, we have knowledge on how to quite literally use induction to heat water, induction to heat materials, so we can bring a water from its natural state to start raising the temperature up as it's going through the system, preheating the fuel source, and by the time it gets out to the atomizer, it's already broken down, it's atomized, and then when it goes through a sonic vaporizer system, it breaks it down yet even more, and then when you shoot that fine mist of a little poof of water molecules down inside that 300 degree temperature cylinder, and it instantaneously hits that cylinder and expands 1600 times its volume pushing that piston down, on that upstroke, you get a compression of the deal, which will then separate the hydrogen and oxygen molecules. At that instant, you get an implosion, which pushes the piston back down again. And none of that, what I just said, violates any of the laws of physics. None of it violates any of known science. It's all proven technology. It has been done. It's been done by accident at nuclear power plants. Instead of making highly radioactive, compacted uranium rods that are depleting and releasing energy, which then in turn is depleting so rapidly that it's actually vibrating the water molecule to produce the heat and eventually the steam that runs our turbines, then you could do this with so many different other methods that would be perfectly safe and clean to the environment.
So nuclear, to give you an example of how easy a nuclear power plant can be put together, it's just by a sedimentary rock, right?
Yeah.
Flint. If you take a whole bunch of flint, big layers that you keep over, your lifetime,
yeah,
you can take all that flint and put it into a cylinder and then heat that cylinder up to a certain temperature, and then all of a sudden you'll see all that flint. What will happen is it'll start getting hot, and then it will take on. It'll start glowing red hot. But if you line that cylinder with a radiator pipe that goes all the way around it.
Yeah.
And keep it at a certain temperature, that reaction that's happening will take a long time to happen. And therefore, you can get the heat off of it, right?
Yeah. Well, there's so many different methods by which to heat water. It's ridiculous. We could do solar, we could actually use high voltage. See, a modern day space age, I'm not going to call it a nuclear power plant per se. I'm just going to reference this as the equivalence of a nuclear power plant. A futuristic modern day kind of design for a power plant would be basically to use the equivalence of the temperature of the sun in order to do the job in such more efficient manner, by taking any of the noble gases and energizing them into plasma and taking that heat off of that plasma to superheat steam and run the deal. And so basically what would happen is if you had any kind of adverse, like an explosion or whatever, and it broke the, cracked the reactor, you would have no radioactive material running around or anything like that. It just, the process would stop. You replace the reactor and then bam, you're back up and running again. But all you have to do is build a power plant that has a combination high voltage / high current dual winding kind of generator, so that whenever you get that steam up to temperature and it starts to run that generator, the high voltage windings on the generator will actually come back to feed the plasma portion of it, and the current portion would go out to the people that needed the electricity. So you can generate a massive amount of high voltage at high frequency with the same exact generator that you're using to send your power out to everybody, and then use the high voltage side to keep the process running. You see what I mean? That's like the plasma globe. It's basically you take a little transistor and you're pulsing this thing really fast, and you're energizing that argon into the plasma state. The probably the best one for a plasma reactor style electrical power plant would be using neon gas. So you got a chamber that surrounds all your tubing that your water is going to be heated through. You're basically the inside of your boiler box, and so this plasma is all surrounding all this tubing. And when you get the gas energized into the fourth state of matter, which is plasma, it produces heat, and it heats that the pipes in there, and then the water that comes through there is instantaneously flashed into steam, which turns your turbines, which turns the generator that's pushing the power out towards the people that need it, and then the high voltage side is cycled back into keeping the plasma going. And so all you need from the start is a piece of circuitry, a couple batteries to basically run some transistors or power MOSFETs to energize a radio frequency to get the gas started in the plasma state. And then
don't think your average blonde is going to get any of that, because I hardly got any of that.
Well, go back and listen to the podcast and re-listen to the podcast, and I'll draw designs out, and I've already put that's what my plasma reactor was doing all the time, was that right now the way that the old plasma reactor was designed, it was basically for tuning, because you can speed the gas up inside there or you can slow it down by the amount of input and the frequency range of what you put into it. But that's not the only byproduct of actually using that high frequency.
Isn't going on to Amazon and getting some solar panels and some batteries and an inverter easier? Like, an average Joe gets that.
For the moment, that would be easier. But if you want to move into the future...
Reactors are like a thing of the past, and they're all theoretical.
Well, what I'm saying ain't theoretical. What I'm saying is proven science fact. And
so you built your power in your house?
Huh?
You're powering your house with it?
No, I'm not powering my house with it. It hasn't been built to that extent. But all of it's proven science fact. Yeah, you've seen a plasma globe, right?
Yeah.
How many things do you know that you can do with one plasma globe?
What's your water going to be like after turning all that water into steam?
What do you mean, what's it going to be like? It's still hydrogen and oxygen. It hasn't got any contaminants with it. So,
you're turning a turbine?
Yeah, with the steam. With the pressure from the steam. So you're running a stainless steel...
Where's the steam going afterwards?
Huh?
Where's the steam going afterwards?
Wherever you want it to. It's water. It's hydrogen and oxygen. Put it in the atmosphere. It ain't going to hurt nothing.
Okay, so you're taking water. You're turning it into gas. You're releasing it in the atmosphere. How much volume do you need per minute of water to turn the turbine?
You only need the steam pressure. You need 650 to 1250 PSI to run your average generator that's going to run your average... electric motor or mechanical version of motor. And so,
right, how much steam do you need to be created? And steam, water turns into steam, and that's volume. So you're going to need water, and how much water are you going to need per day to run your
it doesn't matter, because you can recirculate the water. You can run it through condensers and recapture the same fuel that you just used. Instead of pumping it out into the atmosphere, you can run it through condensers that cool it down from the temperature difference of the steam to the temperature difference of the atmosphere alone. You can just regenerate that and put it back into water and put it right back into your tank and recirculate the doggone stuff.
How big and how much room would this have to take up on my property?
Well, about the size of your average, passenger car, or even in a more higher tech version, a little smaller version, about the size of an AC unit that's already outside of your house now. It's not rocket science, man.
It is rocket science. Rocket science is actually easy. Pulse engines are very easy. They're very simple.
Well, to you it might be rocket science. To me, it's child's play.
Well, it really isn't rocket science. You know, I acknowledge how the copper deflectors and compressors inside the plasma generator work and all other stuff, and how you can pulse it to make it go faster with DC modulators.
You never answered my question. How many things do you know of that you get when you turn on a plasma ball, how many things do you know that you can do with that plasma ball?
A couple of things that aren't very useful.
Such as?
Stick my finger on it, lick it, I don't know.
Well, first off, you're getting visible light, which science says light is heat and heat is light, vice versa, so there's one.
Plugged it into my wall. Now my wall is using energy, you see.
You can get radiant energy off of it to where you can actually light fluorescent bulbs wirelessly by using that frequency to energize the gas.
Who's going to make this glass chamber for me?
Huh?
Because that's going to be able to handle how much? What, 5,000 Kelvin?
It does not have to be made out of glass. The only reason why I ever wanted to make the plasma reactor out of glass was so that people could quite literally see the reaction going on inside there so that they would understand how this was actually functioning.
How are you guiding the beam down and around this torad?
What are you talking about?
Well, this heat, the plasma, okay, when you take plasma and you condense it, you control it into a fine beam, right? And you cause it to oscillate, right? That's what these reactors are doing.
Alright, look.
How are you powering magnetic shielding?
Look, if you take a look at how the plasma ball actually functions...
Right, I know how it functions.
I understand that, but have you ever taken one apart? Have you ever looked inside there to see what was actually occurring? From the circuit board to the actual inside there that actually energizes the gas, have you seen what's actually happening in that plasma ball?
Like, what do you mean, seeing?
There's a single wire coming off of a high voltage deal, and basically you got a corona going on the top of this high voltage, just like the top of a Slayer exciter coil, or even the top of a Tesla coil. You're quite literally using Tesla technology. But anyway, it's radiating a frequency up above that, which is separated actually by glass, so it's not actually even touching the argon inside there. But the frequency at what that is pulsing at is able to vibrate the molecules of argon inside there so rapidly that they produce plasma. And
it's looking for a
path to ground. And so when you put your finger on the outside of that glass, you give it a path to ground, so now it'll follow your finger wherever it goes inside there. That energy wave is just following you through there.
Right.
So.
But that's not how a plasma reactor works.
Yeah, it is. It's exactly how it works.
You just put your finger on it.
Dude, you can take a fluorescent bulb. Alright, listen.
How are you guiding that plasma to go into a circle?
A fluorescent bulb is a plasma reactor. All you have to do...
Oh, but crushed up rock.
Huh?
It's just crushed up rock.
Well, it's glass.
It's oscillating back and forth, like you're saying. What I'm trying to say is that you have a circle, a torad here, and inside it you have a plasma. And you're guiding that plasma to run around in a circle. How are you guiding that plasma to run around in a circle?
You don't...
How's your...
You
building work.
You don't have to guide it anywhere. Plasma will... It will actually surround any object. If you've got a coil of tubing inside that deal, and that gas is energized, it's looking for a path to ground. The coil itself is the path to ground. And so instead of your finger being on the outside of that glass... It's going to find that copper or stainless steel tubing that you're circulating your water through, and it's going to cling to it. That plasma is going to cling to that metal, and so that is where your control is of where it actually centralizes the temperature of the heart of that plasma. So you don't have to guide it anywhere. It does it itself. That energy is looking for a path to ground.
By putting a copper tube around the plasma, it's going to get it hot. Well, then, if I keep my tongue on it, my tongue's going to catch on fire. It's going to disintegrate.
Why would you keep your tongue on it?
I'm trying to see what you're saying, because if I got a copper tube that goes around the plasma ball and I pump water through it, that plasma is going to heat that water up.
No, you're missing the whole point. The copper tube would be inside the plasma ball, inside the vacuum with the argon or neon or halogen or any of the other noble gases that you choose to use. The gases will just determine what color it is.
But it's still not a copper rod up.
The copper tube is inside the plasma ball.
I know it's inside, but it's still not going to heat it up.
Sure it is.
Not that hot.
Don't you know what science says about light? What do you mean not that hot? Have you ever seen a plasma cutter?
Yeah, but you're talking about something that has a lot of amperage behind it.
No, you're wrong. I'm sorry, but that's not how it works. Inside that plasma ball is a lot of heat. And I know this for a fact. I took an argon filled one of the old style tubes out of like a tube TV, a rectifier tube, and I hit that thing with 20,000 volts, and it generated enough heat that it melted a perfect hole in the side of that glass and released a massive amount of energy. But they got hot enough to melt glass. That's over 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. So, with that said, that heat inside there, with that argon being regulated, all you got to do is turn the volume down and get your temperature just right, just like turning the radio up and down or whatever, and that will regulate how fast those molecules of whatever noble gas you choose to energize into plasma will vibrate at. And the voltage input is all that matters. You don't need a lot of freaking amperage or wattage and all that kind of stuff, because what I was doing was in the milliamp range. And I was able to take the 20,000 volt oil burner igniter running off of milliamps and energize gas into the fourth state of matter, being plasma, argon, and got it hot enough to quite literally melt a hole right through the side of that glass. Even fluorescent bulbs, if you go up there and feel the fluorescent bulbs, you can feel they get hot. So, the science is already there. And
the science is doing what I'm talking about.
What are you talking about?
You have to guide the electron. The only way to guide an electron is by taking a copper coil and putting it all the way around in a complete sphere.
You don't have to guide it anywhere. It'll do itself. They used to make these really fancy little neon bulbs. Listen. They used to make these little fancy neon bulbs that had these little figurines inside of them. And they had these little figurines that the plasma would basically cling to this metal, and you could see like a little figurine inside of a light bulb. They still sell them. I mean, you can get on eBay and look them up. Look up different types of fancy neon bulbs, and you'll see that's what they do inside there. But there's no guiding. It's total chaos inside there, outside of the fact that those, when that energy is energized inside it, it's in the plasma, that energy is looking for a path to ground. You give it a path to ground, such as your finger on the plasma ball, and you'll see that arc go up there and follow your finger. If you give it a path to ground using the other side of that light bulb, then the same doggone thing occurs. Your ground wire on your house, there's your path to ground, and so you get this thing to do some pretty cool stuff.
Some cool stuff.
Yeah. So look, it's like I said, and I'll say it again: it's not rocket science, and you don't have to be high tech in order to figure it out. It's basically you energize that gas. It wants to find a place to go, just like the top load of a Tesla coil. It is a Tesla coil inside a glass tube. That's it. And the frequency that's coming off of it is what does it. If you pull a plasma ball apart, you will notice that there is no anode or cathode inside the plasma ball. The plasma ball is nothing but filled with gas. That's it. There's no wire inside there. And so it's just using the pulse of that frequency to energize that gas. That's it. It's ridiculously simple. Pull one apart. You'll see what I'm talking about.
Yeah, you're pulling something that is completely designed, completely different, that doesn't even function as a heater.
It ain't meant to be used as a heater. However, right. It has those capabilities. Huh?
How are you heating the water?
You can't with a plasma ball.
You can't heat water with a plasma ball.
No.
But I thought you were heating water.
You got to put the coil inside the glass, seal it up, and then it will heat the water. It will transfer the heat from the plasma to whatever metal you have inside there.
So what's the input voltage for one of these toy plasma balls? Very, very minute, right?
There's about anywhere from 10,000 and up voltage going inside that plasma ball.
Well, what's the amperage?
It's in the milliamp range.
Okay, so we're talking about very, very low wattage, and inside of the plasma ball. Okay, so we can magnify the output a little bit because it's in the plasma ball because there's no oxygen, so the oscillation can happen more faster. So, okay, I could see you heating up maybe a shot glass or two.
Did you ever see my video, Redneck Hot Tub?
No.
I took a coffee pot element and at 110 volts was able to heat an entire bathtub of water so hot that you could not sit in it. It would kill you if you sat in it. One coffee pot element. It took 4 hours to get up to operating temperature, but once it was up to operating temperature, you'd have to shut it off. Otherwise, it would get too hot. And so, without any insulation underneath the bathtub and open up to the atmosphere, the air outside, this was able to get up to a certain temperature that you could not sit inside of it. It was too hot. And so, you want to talk about efficiency, startup time, you had to allow it to basically start heating that water. And with just a little input from that point on, once it got up to operating temperature, all you had to do was maintain a little bit of heat, and that sucker would keep on heating up and keep on heating up, and eventually you had to reach over and turn the switch off because you boil yourself in it. But that was done with a coffee pot element. What we're talking about with a plasma ball, the plasma inside there is hot. Are you going to heat your house with a plasma ball? No. But with the concept of what the plasma ball actually does, light is heat, heat is light, that's what science says, that's what's been proven. And so you can take that plasma on a larger scale, which doesn't have to be much larger, but at more voltage input and very little amperage or in wattage involved in actually generating the equivalence of a radio frequency that you're going to energize this gas into the fourth state of matter, you can turn it up to where you could quite literally destroy it by turning it up too high. It will melt right through the container. That's how hot it can get. And that's how they're able to use these plasma cutters that can cut through steel like butter. Because they're taking the atmosphere that's surrounding the tip and they're energizing that atmosphere, the oxygen, the hydrogen, and nitrogen and gas in the air.
Well, when it comes to a plasma cutter, what they're doing is they're spewing out an a noble gas like argon.
Yeah,
or Zion.
But even
Zion.
Without, but even
it,
look.
What that,
listen.
It,
even without.
Quick that tip. When it pushes the oxygen away from that tip, now it allows for that connection, that oscillation between the steel,
Justin,
and the anode.
Justin, I know about
it.
Welding, and I know about plasma cutters. Listen,
energy is it to get that argon?
Listen, that plasma cutter without any argon will still cut through steel. The argon, its only purpose is to give it a clean weld by pushing some of the molecules away from the deal so that it will give a smoother cut. They use the same exact thing in TIG welding, MIG welding, and stick welding. By using the argon, they can control that reaction that's going on. If you take
argon there, it removes all of the oxygen out of the area.
Listen, if you
not allow
if
the,
you
the,
look at any point system in any car, any old car that uses the electronics points and even an electronic ignition. If you take the rotor cap and the distributor cap off of the top of that and you look at those contacts, that basically that high voltage arc that was going from one contact to another was actually not only building carbon up from the destruction of the metal as it made its leap across there, and that's why they had to have a condenser in the old style to keep the points from burning up. Otherwise, you wouldn't get very much time out of the point system because that high voltage arc would destroy it. So, in order to get this to not destroy it, they bled off some of that high voltage arc into a condenser, which then in turn bled that off into the frame of the vehicle. In the modern days, it's pretty much the same concept with just a different bit of equipment. But nonetheless, that high voltage arc is enough to cut through that metal. That's how come we're able to take a wire welder without any argon, and we're literally able to melt metal using that high voltage arc and blend all this metal in together and weld two pieces together. The argon comes into play in order to make it a cleaner weld so that you ain't got all that spatter going on all over the place.
And that's where the argon makes the oxygen away from the area.
Sure, but it doesn't get all of the oxygen away.
Oxygen does what to all materials? It corrodes it. So
we're arguing over ridiculous now. That's all we're arguing over.
I was trying to say something and you weren't acknowledging.
What I'm saying is that when we're talking about the plasma reactor, the same exact thing that's going on inside that ball is a controlled reaction that is the same exact thing with a plasma cutter or a welder. It doesn't matter. It generates enough heat to melt steel.
You need a condenser in a fusion reactor.
No, you don't. You really don't.
You can't accelerate it that fast. Then a plasma ball is at what, 35, 40 kilohertz, 50 kilohertz, whereas a fusion reactor is at what?
You're doing the same exact thing that all of these engineers out here overcomplicate and overthinking something that is so ridiculously simple. It doesn't have to be all this crazy stuff going on. All you have to understand is what science has proven. Light is heat. Heat is light. So even if this plasma ball is only this big and it's only got running off of a 9-volt battery, it's still generating heat inside that plasma, inside that ball.
If you're in Canada, it took 4 hours down there.
If you go
minus 40, it's going to take years before that ball would ever heat up.
So insulate it. Go find out what the best R factor of any insulation is. Wrap that puppy around like a thermos so that you can contain that energy inside there. And it will heat up rapidly. So, you know, it don't matter whether you're in a cold climate.
A church?
Huh?
Would it be able to heat up the volume of my church or my house or even my garage?
Well,
no.
Sure it would.
No.
Sure it would. Once you understood how energy actually travels and where all your losses come from, you can compensate with all the different types of materials available on the market today. No ifs, ands, or buts. The only reason why we are inefficiently heating our house is because we don't understand the concept of heat rises and cold air falls. So when somebody builds a house and they have the air conditioner vents going through the floor, well, it stays down on the floor. Same thing with your heat. If you got your heat vent on the ceiling, obviously it's going to be hot at the ceiling, but it's not going to be hot on the floor, and you waste more energy trying to heat it. But if you design your heating and cooling to where your heat is going through the floor, because we know heat rises, and your cold air is going to go through the ceiling because you know the cold air falls, it's the same concept.
Asking about the plasma ball, have you ever looked in the fusion reaction?
I've looked into every subject under the sun, Justin.
So you looked at the stellar and the tokamak?
What's your point?
Is that those are all plasma reactors. And every single one of them uses some sort of magnetic mirroring.
Then, you know,
of internal current.
However they engineered it, for whatever purpose they engineered it, it's doing whatever they designed it to do. And I'm telling you that it could be simplified by using basic science, proven physics, no ifs, ands, or buts. It's
but
just
all
a
those
matter
are on
it.
Basic science.
Huh?
Those are all done with basic science.
Yeah, but why get all high-tech about it when you don't have to? Look at the simplicity of a doggone fluorescent light bulb, for Pete's sake. You know? If you understand how a fluorescent light bulb works, you can actually change the color of that light bulb just by changing the materials inside of it. The gas, or if you understand how this is actually, how the entire reaction of a fluorescent light bulb is occurring, you can do a lot with it.
Like if I take 55 kilohertz, right, 40 kilohertz, and I put argon in the bulb, it'll light up a certain color. If I put krypton in there, it'll light up a certain color. But doesn't mean that the emissions off of it's going to be any hotter or cooler. It'd be a little bit, but you're still only going to get, what, nothing for heat. Nothing.
Well, the system has...
The gas inside isn't going to, you know, create a greater output than what the input is.
Oh, my God.
And all
folks, you're witnessing an example of why it is that this world is still in the same state of affairs that it is right now. Because the simplicity of what I'm trying to say to people is easily proven and disproven if you decide to do it. Look,
here's the thing is if you want somebody to take on your project because you can't do it.
What are you talking about?
Well, you said that this would work and it's so simple, it's the way to go.
Sure it
and
is.
Where is it? Where is this thing that you've created other than a concept out of your head?
Justin, everything that is necessary to build what I'm talking about is on the store shelf. All right. The manufacturing to precision in order to make sure that something is sealed up, vacuumed down properly, requires a little bit more effort, such as somebody who like builds neon signs. They're
just
good in their trade.
Get to your local glass vacuum place and get it paid for. If this is the answer, then it's worth every penny you got.
And so if somebody lays down all the numbers to the winning lottery and they're right there in front of your very eyes and you decide, well, no, you go do it and then I'll then I'll partake of it. It's kind of like somebody making the cake and doing all the work and getting all the materials, and then you get to reap the benefits of it, even though you put no effort towards it whatsoever. If somebody puts the doggone lottery numbers down in front of you and you don't go pick them up and go buy your lottery ticket, then you didn't win no lottery, did you? It's that simple.
What I'm saying, yeah, you just gotta go broke. Look, Elon Musk did it, right? How many times did he go broke? You're pretty near broke. Pretty damn near close to it, right?
Regardless, the technology's there.
When you know you got
it's
something.
It's all proven science.
Put into it.
And I shared it with the world. And so, you know, it's that simple. Either use it or don't. It's your choice. It's that simple. You know, and right.
I take into consideration what you're talking about, and I go look up all everything that I already know about it, and go look up everything that I can go look up about it. It's not plausible.
Well, then you did the wrong research, obviously, because you didn't pay attention to what basic science says.
What basic science is saying.
How many volts does it take to run a 110? 110 wire welder.
For how long?
As long as you want to run it. As long as the doggone inefficient system to keep it from overheating. How long do you want to run it? But it just to actually weld two pieces of metal together, 110 volts AC at 50 hertz, 60 hertz, either one is enough to where you can melt steel to steel. And so, if you took the equivalence of a coffee pot and ran this system, but was able to generate enough heat to melt steel, with a 12 volt battery, you can use an induction heater to melt steel. You can use an induction heater to take the stainless steel into quite literally glowing red hot molten metal.
Right.
Once you understand the basic concepts of how things function, then you can, with a little bit of input, be able to generate. Imagine if you have an induction heater that you're using to do the same thing that the average boiler system. Back whenever in 1984, I was working on boilers. Our boilers ran anywhere from 650 PSI to 1250 PSI. We shot atomized fuel inside a chamber, and there were tubes inside that chamber that atomized fuel was then ignited, and it got those pipes red hot inside there. You could look inside there, and every single one of those pipes were red hot. And then we'd inject water inside those pipes. We'd instantaneously superheat that doggone water, flash it into steam, push that steam pressure down there, goes to the engine room through a turbine system that in turn turned huge motors. Not one, but four. Huge motors. There were two boilers and two engines for every. There was two engine rooms and two boiler rooms. Each one of them had two boilers in them. So all together, there were eight boilers and eight engines inside there that were turning big giant shafts, which were turning big giant screws. Which are for those who don't know what a screw is, it's a propeller on the ship. Big giant brass propellers that pushed that ship around. And we did it using fuel oil. The same thing could be done using plasma technology. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. You know, if you don't believe it, don't try it. And if you don't try it, you don't lose nothing.
Without the fuel, which is the amperage, the current, you can't go nowhere. That's what it all comes down to.
All right. Well, I guess you missed the points of the points. When I told you about the point system, and I told you how destructive high voltage was, and I told you how powerful lightning itself is, and what you could actually do with all of this. You see, you're stuck in the current watts and amps world, and this is why I end up getting in a feud with everybody and his brother, because they don't understand. High voltage is powerful. High voltage starts fires. High voltage actually breaks through insulation and starts fires. It will make the thermal breakdown of any material fail.
Everybody acknowledges that, but when it comes down to actually powering your fridge or your stove, it takes time. You want to cook a roast for 45 minutes? How much amps? How much watts, right? Or voltage?
Well, until you actually take the knowledge and do your due diligence,
you don't
know that answer.
What?
Until you actually take the time to do the test and do your due diligence, you won't know that answer. In your mind, it's a theory.
Not in my mind, it's a theory. You're the one that's been going on for almost 10 years now, and you have yet to accomplish anything besides just state everything. You see, people that make it and go somewhere and do something, actually progress for humanity, put everything out on the limb and do it all. Not just talk about it, right?
Justin?
You're talking about something.
You amaze me.
And how magnetic mirroring or shielding works.
You amaze me. You know, one of these days the world has to step outside the box. And one of these days the world has to open their eyes to put the possibilities and potentials. And if it takes me getting on here trying to talk the world through this deal and get some really good, talented fabricators out there, manufacturers to do things, you know, I have been, you say I ain't never accomplished nothing. I got news for you, buddy. For all these years, ever since I started on this journey, I've been putting diagrams and designs out there that other people have replicated and claimed for themselves. Never looked for credit, never come on their videos and said, yeah, I had that idea first, because maybe I didn't have the idea first. But nonetheless, I actually designed it, and I put it out there free for the public. And they turned around, they did it, they worked. You'd be surprised at how many of my little design that I've got, the GIF animation of the electric pulse engine, how many people out there right now are actually making what they call solenoid motors. And so that particular design, what I was talking about, they have single cylinders, they got dual cylinders, they got all the way up to 12 cylinders and more of basically what they call solenoid engines. Well, I designed that a long, long time ago, way before, you know, I ever even got on YouTube or anything like that. And I actually took it into a GIF animation program and showed a proof of concept to explain to people how this works, because I understood how powerful that electromagnetism and how powerful torque can be, and how you can get these solenoid motors to actually do the same thing as an internal combustion engine, and by using the equivalence of an alternator and a combination of a distributor, you could pulse that around to whichever cylinder you wanted to in sequence in order to turn a camshaft, which would in turn turn your transmission and so on down the line until it's turning your wheels. You could build the equivalence of an electric engine. Without any kind of gasoline whatsoever, you got enough torque to do the exact same thing that you would be as if you were putting it into fuel. And so for you to say that I have never done anything, that's just crazy. Because I've been giving these ideas away over and over and over again. I've been giving these ideas away.
You're claiming that you invented the solenoid engine.
Did I say I invented it? No. I said I drew this up over 20 some odd years ago, put it out there on the internet for all to see, and now everybody and his brother are building the same thing. So if I was wrong in what I said back then, they wouldn't be building them now.
What are they building?
Solenoid engines.
That's what I just said. You didn't, but you just replicated something that 10,000 people before.
No, sir. I built and designed mine, I called it an electric pulse engine. All right, and now they're called solenoid engines, but they're the same exact concept that I done way back then.
So you reworded it. That's what English is about, persuasive writing.
Oh man, you're giving me a headache.
Well.
Folks, I'm done with all this crazy stuff. I'm done with it. I'm tired of arguing with people over simplicity. And this is why the world is the way that it is because people just can't take things simple. They got to stick their nose in the book. They got to keep it in the book. If you don't believe what I'm saying, you know, look, that's fine. But without doing any research, if you don't try it before you deny it, then it's just all talk. And for people to sit there and tell me that all I do is talk about stuff, man, you should see my lab. You should see my room. You should see the over 270 some odd videos that I put out there sharing ideas with people. I may not be the most qualified manufacturer of things, but I'm sharing these ideas and concepts from the research that I've done and years before the solenoid motor ever came around, where people were talking about solenoid motors. That little GIF animation, which I'm going to copy a link to the doggone thing, and I'm going to post it in the chat room so that you can look at it and sit there and watch how that thing functions. And that is what I shared with everybody way back. Am I the first one to ever come up with the idea? I highly doubt it. There was probably some other genius who thought of it as well. But nonetheless, it still says that even back then, whenever I said this was going to work, it worked. You know? And people built it. So, regardless, I'm not going to spend the rest of my life arguing with people over something that is simple. It just don't make no sense. So, you know what? I invite people to come on my radio show, and I ask them to be respectful. They drop the F-bomb on me, so I got to go back and edit that. And then they want to make me like I don't do nothing. Well, now you know why I call it mad science. Because this isn't the only time that I ever had to contemplate or deal with trolls. People that want to sit around and find every negative possibility under the sun, reasons why you can't do something. I'm tired of that. I don't want to hear why you can't do something. Either try it, and if it fails, we'll troubleshoot why it failed, and we'll resolve the issue, and then we'll move forward as society. Or don't even holler about it. You know, if you talk to an electrical engineer and you try to explain to him in the same way that I'm explaining to him how mechanically the electricity actually functions, which should be blatantly obvious if you follow what science taught to begin with. If you follow physics, it should be blatantly obvious. But some people are overcomplicating, overthinking it, and they want to be rude and disrespectful about their way of trying to tell you how wrong you are about it. Well, if you already know this will work, how come you ain't off the power grid? Because everything out here costs money. That's one reason. And since I'm not willing to ask anybody for donations or any kind of help in doing that, other than if they want to volunteer to, you know, put their services out there, and I put my services out there, and together we troubleshoot it and we build it together so that everybody can benefit with an open source design. That's why I'm not off the power grid. That's why I'm still paying the bill. And when it comes down to making this world a better place, why should I be any better than that person that's sitting down there in a mud hut somewhere in a different place while they're sweating and I got air conditioning? So if my sacrifice is paying my bill until I can get enough people at the table that really want to make a change and make things happen to prove it can be done, and you look what happened to Stan Myers, you look what happened to John Bedini and all the other different researchers we've talked about on this radio show so many times. They died. They didn't get rich. They had their patents rejected. We're using Tesla technology today, but very few people in the real science community want to give Tesla credit for anything. There's people that want to come out here and talk about how, Tesla was some weirdo or something like that. Nonetheless, you're still going to talk on his technology. You're going to talk on his cell phone. He designed it. He showed you how to do it. And yet, you want to sit there and talk about how weird he was? Tesla believed in aliens. Tesla was crazy, or whatever. There's a lot of people out there that believe in aliens. There's a lot of people believe the moon is made out of cheese. There's a lot of people that believe the moon's a hologram, or it's hollow, or whatever. There's a lot of people that believe the earth is flat. But until these individuals out here get to believing in, tired of being enslaved by the man and the system of all the different companies and corporations that are making money hand over fist, lying to people about science, until that comes about, I still have something to yell about here on Mad Science. I'm done arguing with people over this. If you want to work on it together, we get together, we work on it. If you don't work on it, then the status quo is the status quo. You're still paying the light bill. You're still connected to the power grid. You get one group of people working on the legislation and working around on all the different regulations and stuff like that. You get another group of people working on the manufacturing. You get another person working on materials, recycling, and new materials, and whatever. You take all the resources available in your community, including recycling and repurposing old appliances and using whatever you can out of it in order to get everything done. It's no longer a theory. It's proven. That's the way it works. And until people finally come to that realization, then that's just the way it's going to be. It's just going to be the way it is. And there are going to be wars over oil. There's going to be wars over resources when none of it's necessary. None of it. There is no energy crisis. There is more energy than we could ever use in a trillion, 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 trillion lifetimes. You will never run out of what they call fossil fuel. It's not physically possible until the Earth stops doing what the Earth stops, what the Earth is doing now. Until the chemistry changes, you're never going to run out of it. Go pump it out of the ground. Pump it all out. Pump it dry. Come back years later and those same doggone things will be full again. The oil came from somewhere. It came from a process where in a carbon-based world, all this chemistry, the temperatures, everything that goes on in this self-contained biosphere of epic proportions has quite literally been producing and producing fresh material all the time. Even when you burn firewood, you get useful products. No matter what you do to any substance on this planet, you get a useful product. And when you drink all the water and you relieve yourself from drinking all the water, it goes back into the system and guess what? It gets cleaned up, recycled, repurposed, and everything that we've ever had, every chemical that's ever been on there, every material that's ever been on the earth is still on the earth today in some form or fashion. Unless you believe in aliens and they strip mined the planet and took a bunch of it off. But nonetheless, it's still doing what it's been doing all these years. So you're not going to run out of material. You're not going to run out of water. So all the doom and gloomers and all the negative naysayers, negative Nancys, all the jive turkeys of the world that keep telling you how much of a problem we got are just spewing out pure ridiculousness and fear porn and propaganda just to keep you enslaved in your mind and your bodies and your life and everything that you do they want to have control over. When you, the people out there, realize that you outnumber the elite by the millions, and you finally decide to exercise your power, and you want to generate free electrical power, and you want to share it with everybody and his brother on the planet, we've got everything we need to do so. I'm just one guy. I'm not the guy that can go out there and build your house for you. I'm not the guy that can build from ground up your car unless I got all the parts and then I can build a car because I understand exactly from start to finish how that car is put together and how it functions. So I can repair my own car. I don't have to go pay somebody to repair it. But when it comes down to meticulously precision measuring, such as using a milling machine or a lathe, I don't have those skill sets. So the reason why I don't have a working plasma reactor in front of me that is perfect precision and everything is because I don't have thousands of dollars to pay a machine shop to do what it is that I need to be done, and I don't have thousands of dollars to pay somebody who's into neon science to assist them in the process, because the greed of everybody out there, they won't make just one part for a proof of concept, even if you offer to give them all rights to that deal. If I took a design to any manufacturer, which I've done on multiple occasions, I said, here's this design. All I want is for you to build me one. Just one. And you can patent this in your own name, and you can keep this design for yourself, and you can, if you make billions of dollars off of it, I'll never ask you for another thing, with the exception of that one prototype. That's it. And not one taker. Nobody wanted to step outside the line and trust one crazy mad science guy long enough to humor me to see if it would work or it wouldn't work. And when I talked to a mechanical engineer who could literally use a lathe and a milling machine in order to design a car that would specifically run off of a specific type of fuel, such as pure distilled water without any type of electrolyte necessary, I caught a rash. And he even did a video about it, and he called it bollocks. You can look it up on YouTube. It's basically, he doesn't say my name, but I knew exactly who he was talking about and what he was referring to. And he was misquoting every single thing and misunderstanding the laws of physics and thermodynamics. And so he basically did not take his talent and help build a motor that would have proven exactly what I said. The laws of thermodynamics are the biggest hockahooey in the history of hockahooeys, along with global warming and man-made climate change. It's pure ridiculousness. If you can't understand that basic science says that the breakdown of water is oxygen and hydrogen, it's fuel. And you know that if you boil water, you get steam. And you know that you can't compress a liquid, which is water in its natural state. So there we use hydraulics. But if you boil that water and you turn it into steam, it is no longer a liquid. It's now a gas. Gas can be energized into the fourth state of matter, being plasma. Plasma is heat. Light is heat. Heat is light. When that high frequency is rushing through that gas, it's rocking them molecules back and forth rapidly, producing friction, which in turn produces heat. And there you go. And we can sit around and argue on how much wattage and how much amperage and how much of this you got to get and all this kind of stuff in order to heat your doggone house. But until it's manufactured, until it's put out there on the table as a proven working device, then it's just theory. It's not theory, it's scientific fact, based off a scientific proven fact. It's repeatable, it's testable, and anybody out there in a lab can take every single idea I've got and they can turn around and patent it under their own name, and they can put it out there on the market. And they can get rich. And I wouldn't care. Because the moment one of those objects hits the doggone store shelf, I get the I told you so moment. Proof of concept right there. Does exactly what I said it was going to do. Stan Meyer said you could drive a car on water. He believed it. It was all theoretical at the time. He made it happen. Custom injectors and custom radio wave technology, and he was able to use that. years later, after they debunked Stan Myers and tried to say he was a nutcase and did everything that they could to troll and degrade that man and steal his ideas, years later, another man used radio frequencies to ignite water on demand. He basically turned water into fire using radio frequencies. And he turned around and told everybody he'd sell out to the highest bidder. That's why we're in the state that we're at. If you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough, because we are floating in a sea of free energy. And for those people that want to come on my radio show and drop the doggone F-bomb and try to tell me I don't do nothing, well, you better look back in time to find out what actually I have done. I've done everything I can possibly do to try to help everybody with all the information and links and all these wonderful people to come together and share information as well. And if I got a working device, it's going to be right there in front of you. It's going to be my I told you so moment. And I keep putting things together. And I keep saying the exact same thing. Replicate. Make it precision. And it will work so much better than what I'm showing you right here and now. And if you understand the implications of what it is that I'm actually showing you, then you understand that you already have free energy. You already have every single thing you need to do exactly what I've been saying. So if that makes me stupid, well, then I guess the trolls will just have to keep telling me I'm stupid. I've been called everything under the sun. I've been aggravated to the extent where I was ready to delete every single thing from my radio show to my YouTube channel, Facebook, and Twitter, and all the ways that I try to reach out to everybody and share ideas with them. I put this platform together to bring people to the table, to add a microphone and a place to communicate so that we could all get something accomplished. Everybody says they want free energy. There are people that are living off the power grid with solar panels. There are people living off the power grid with wind turbines. There are people living off the power grid with a combination of both. There are people using biodiesel. There are people working on hydrogen technology. There are people working on all kinds of different technology having to do with alternative energy, green energy, clean energy, renewable, whatever you want to call it, free energy. But it seems like in the process of all that, you're coming underneath the guns of the doggone governments, the corporation, and the average Joe, who is their own worst enemy when it comes to advancing as a society. It's not the government that I fear as far as slowing us down. It's the average Joe that I fear as far as slowing us down. Because the average Joe has allowed the educational indoctrination system to quite literally tell them that things are not possible, that science says are indeed possible. So, you know what? The holy grail of free energy is right there in front of your very eyes. It's been there. It's been there since way back in the 1800s and probably even prior. We have technology right now to build self-charging electric vehicles. And that same self-charging electrical vehicle could be the power plant for your house. So when you're driving around all day long, going doing your grocery shopping, and then you come home, you back your car up into your garage, it connects to a male and a female plug, and it turns your house all your power on in your house. And while you're gone, you can have a battery backup system that will run every bit of appliances that you got while you're gone. It's long enough for you to go to the grocery store or work, and then when you come home, you are quite literally driving your power plant. The battery technology and the capacitor technology is incredibly advanced and will continue to be getting more advanced. And eventually, without you ever even knowing it, free energy will be right underneath your nose. Because they're already putting it on the market. They're already putting it in the washing machines that don't no longer have to have any transmissions. The old style wash machines had transmissions, they had belt driven motors, and they figured out a way how to turn an electrical motor into the transmission. And so whereas you had to have all this gear ratio prior, pulley to wet ratios, large pulleys to small pulleys, either speed it up or slow it down to give you torque or not torque, they managed to put that into one nifty package in a stator motor, rotor stator motor, a DC pulse motor that had enough power to literally turn the barrel that all your water and all your wet clothes is inside. If you take that entire amount of water and you take all the wet clothes up out of there and you try to lift it by yourself, you will note how many pounds. There is so much weight inside your washing machine when you're doing a load of laundry. But that motor has enough torque and it has enough power to keep that thing going and wash your clothes day after day for years before you got to change any parts. They put that right there. That particular motor in the Samsung and the Fisher and Paykel washing machines is a generator right out of the box. You don't even have to do anything to it. You hook it up to a wind turbine and it's going to generate power. It's already a two-phase generator before you ever even touched in it. No manipulating, no rewiring, right out of the machine. The machine fails because of the circuitry, so they throw these things into trash because it's cheaper to go out and buy a new one than put a new circuit board in the doggone thing. And so whilst down in the scrapyard, you grab that motor out of there, you hook it to a huge wind blade or whatever, and you think about leverage, because the larger the blade is, the easier it's going to be able to turn. And then you think about how you want to pull that power off of there. If you pull it off in the standard form that we do, then you're going to have to overcompensate for the lens effect, which is that drag that you'll get as soon as you turn the light bulb on. But if you understand how to take that energy off of that generator, store it in capacitors, and bleed that energy over into batteries, and then run inverter systems to run whatever it is from that point, you can make that one little deal so much more efficient. And using plasma technology, if you understand, you bring this thing up to extremely high speeds at around about 300 to 400 volts, you'll start energizing any gas into the fourth state of matter. If you make this doggone generator, this windmill, capable of using some serious RPMs, get up to like 50,000 RPMs where that puppy's screaming. The higher the RPMs, the higher the voltage, the lower the RPMs, the higher the current. And so if you got this thing out in just a brief wind, and you got the gear ratio right, you can get it to do just like a synchronous motor does, or one of those motors that you see inside of the doggone microwave oven deal. When you got that gear ratio, it's really hard to turn that deal around, but that big gear is turning the smaller gears at such a higher RPM that little magnet inside that motor is screaming inside there. A little tiny magnet producing a whole bunch of electrical current at high voltage, and you can when I saw that first video and that guy said he got shocked from it, I didn't believe it. But when I turned around, got one myself and tested it out, I got shocked. I couldn't believe it. And then I understood exactly what was going on. So the fact is, if you understand how energy travels, and you understand that if you generate high voltage, high frequency, that you can't run your house on that. But you can take that energy and you can change it, because according to the laws of physics, energy can neither be created nor destroyed, but it can be changed. You can change it in different forms of energy, to light, to heat, to whatever. You can pressurize containers such as capacitors. You can take that now pressurized container and you can get back the current that you wanted. You can take that pressurized capacitor, overpressurize it. When it overpressurizes, it's going to look for a path to ground. One of two things. If it can't find a path to ground, that capacitor is going to explode. But if it can find a path to ground, it's going to discharge across the spark gap, pulsing another coil, which is going to send out another magnetic field, which is going to pressurize that transformer. And then when that magnetic field collapses, it's going to give a back EMF spike of massive proportions. So, for people to come in here and tell me I don't know what I'm talking about, or I ain't never done nothing, it's all proof of concept, it's all proof of theory, it's all scientific proven fact, and if you don't believe it, then you wasn't paying attention because you didn't get out there and use the scientific mess to test it. That's it. The reason why you're underneath the gun of the power companies and the governments and the corporations out there is because that's how their wallet stays fat. And that's why the regulations and the rules and the laws all get put into place to keep you oppressed and keep you down. In that movie, The Bug's Life, that grasshopper told it. He told it just like it was. He said that those ants outnumber us 10 to 1. And when they realize that, then our way of life is done. And so we're going back. They're going to go back and set that one ant straight. Well, right now I'm that one ant. And I'm saying bring it on. I threw down a gauntlet to NASA. I threw down the gauntlet to all the mainstream scientists out there. I dared them. Come on this radio show. All right? Let's get together on a live stream. Let's do a debate. And you tell me why it is that your laws of physics work for some but won't work for others. And why it is that your science, you say this when this is supposed to be the truth. NASA supposedly sent a probe all the way to Pluto, millions of miles away. Was out there in space for 9 years. And was able to basically take a picture of something that is so far away that if you look back at our sun, it looked like a little pin light in the sky. Said that it was so far away from the sun that a solar panel could only produce about 2 watts. And so they took a piece of uranium or plutonium and made a thermal reactor that went through space. All the harshness of space is what we were told, all the way down there to Pluto. For 9 years, that battery was floating through space. And it finally got there. By the time it got there, it was supposedly producing over 200 watts of power that took a picture, had to run a lighting system or whatever kind of camera system that they had, digitize that information, and send it all the way back through space and pick it up and download a picture for you. Now, I don't know how long you want to wait around to be able to call something free energy, but if something lasts for 9 years, that's a doggone good battery if it's going to last for 9 years. And as far as over unity and perpetual motion and all the high-tech terminology and the laws of thermodynamics that they use to try to prove that there ain't no such thing as free energy because you got too many losses, well, that's because they don't want you to. And then the second thing is, that's because they ain't never tried it. And last but not least, the whole doggone concept of not being able to do something because of losses means you're doing it wrong. Then inefficiency, if it's inefficient, if it's producing heat, you have to ask why it's producing heat. If it's producing heat in a induction coil, then that means that you're putting too much power to it. That's why it's producing the eddy currents. Just like the whirlpools at the bottom of a doggone waterfall. That's what. You got all this power going down there. Ain't got nowhere to go. It needs somewhere to go. If you give it a wider path, then it'll just slap on the water and go on down the road without any whirlpools. But that ain't the case. It's combined in a small width of a river. And so one that's coming down through there, it's putting more water than the river can get rid of at the moment. And so you get these little whirlpools going on. The same thing applies with electricity. And so if you want to make them incredibly efficient, then you need to understand the basic concepts of what's actually occurring. I may be ranting, I may be raving. I've had my friends tell me I'm on a soapbox. I find that the most offensive BS in the history of time. I've lost friends because I told them I don't care about current watts and amps. And there's a reason why I say it, but they weren't willing to sit around long enough and listen to my explanation of why I said it. They wanted me to conform to their way of thinking. I don't want you to conform to my way of thinking. I want you to try it before you deny it, its simplicity in its finest. If it doesn't work for you, you come back and you say, hey man, I tried this out and it didn't work. And then we'll troubleshoot it and we'll make it work. Or we'll move on. Energy is free. It always has been. And all the technology to basically uplift our brothers and sisters around this world is available when we choose to use it. We have free will. We have all the resources necessary. We got a corrupt government. We got a corrupt system financially. All the different corporations and all the different companies and even the average Joes who are so greedy or got a big giant ego and believe that their way is the only way. I'm not saying my way is the only way. I'm saying that every way that I've pointed out is already on the doggone table. There's tons of YouTube researchers that are showing you good pieces of the puzzle that have taken in conjunction with one another make the perfect machine like the Swiss watch. And that's all that needs to be done. Network in your communities. Get together. And make it so. Build it. Build it. It's not rocket science. Folks, you've been listening to the Mad Science Show. And if the status quo is the same, the next time around, you'll hear me get just as riled up. If you want to come on the Mad Science Show, you're invited to come on the Mad Science Show. Please be respectful of your language, and you know, it takes a little bit of restraint. Sometimes we get passionate, but don't be dropping F-bombs on here. Don't come on here telling me I'm wrong without ever trying it yourself. I share ideas, I accept and listen to your ideas, and you know, you might teach me something. I hope you do. But I'm not going to sit idly by while this world is in the shape that it is right now. And I'm not going to, not say nothing. There's wonderful people in these chat rooms that, like Stephen Gibbons, if you scroll up above the player, he put a resource, Stephen's resource page. There's a button right above the radio player in the super chat room. Where Steven's taking his own time and he's actually gathered up tons and tons of links. The links are in the chat room. These particular chat rooms, if you scroll up to the top, it actually has, or you can go look at the previous messages and you can find other links that may have been on the show prior. There are a ton of podcasts on the Mad Science Show link where if you go up to the top where it says Mad Science, there's a drop-down menu. It's the Mad Science Podcast. On the Knights of the Round Table, which is tomorrow's show, where we get to talk about a bunch of more stuff in the world. There's tons of podcasts there. And if you have your own radio network, you can download every single podcast that you want. You can chop them up and use them however you want. Anything you find on here, all this information's free. Any links, any photos, anything like that, you can copy the whole doggone website if you want. It doesn't matter. This isn't about money, it isn't about fame, it isn't about fortune, it isn't about notoriety or anything like that. It's about making this world a better place, one positive pebble, one great idea at a time. Find an idea on this thing, find an idea on Stephen's resource page and go with it. Run with it and see how far you can take that idea. That's how this is going to work. That's the only way we can fix this world is when we the people realize our true potential. So, with that, I'm going to say peace and love to everybody. If you like anything on this podcast, share it with your brothers and sisters out there on your own social media networks. If they were really serious about making this world a better place, it'd be done. If the governments were serious about it, it'd be done. If the governments wanted to solve starvation and sickness and homelessness, it'd be done. If the governments wanted to stop all, end all wars, it'd be done. And it'd be done in a peaceful, respectful, and an intelligent and a common sense manner. But there's people out there who profit from your suffering. And that's the way it is. We're hoping to change that. Here on the Mad Science Show at ShazizRadio.com, People for People Radio, and TCT Network, and all the other affiliates.
Stood up to me.
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one hand.
Ooh.
One hand.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one hand.
Yeah, boss. They're puny.
Puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this? You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100-1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.